To what do you aspire? What is it in your life that you have set down and planned and set goals and you've looked forward? In the military, they say you lean forward in the foxhole. You know, you got to kind of see, okay, what's going on around me so I can be situationally aware, so I can get my sectors of fire, all that great military terminology that many of us are familiar with, and appropriately, many of us are not. But I want you to understand, what are the things in your life that you set goals for? Where do you find fulfillment in life? And then as we tweak that question, how do you see yourself in your service to God? How do you see yourself in your service to God and His church? It's not my church. It's not our church, although we call Cornerstone our church, and it is our church. But foremost, it is God's church. And God's church transcends these walls, right? There are many aspects and formations of God's church throughout Fayetteville and certainly throughout the world. But where do you see yourself in that? To what do you aspire to serve in God's church? Now, I'll be honest with you, there's one question that is the most dreaded question I'm ever asked. If you ever want to, you know, get under my skin, ask me this question, all right? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? Don't you? I hate that question. All right? It's like, that means not only am I just leaning forward, I've had my charts out, and I'm planning, and I'm looking forward, and I'm making some assumptions and different things, but that question is the one that just haunts me, and how am I supposed to know what 10 years from now looks like? Especially in the volatile world that we live in. There is literally no way of knowing what will happen. And I fear I'll fall into the trap that James warns us about. You don't need to turn there, but just listen to me. In James 4, starting verse 13, he writes, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin." That is actually, that last verse there is the one that drew me into my early faith. It drew me to a faithful walk with the Lord. I literally, that particular verse, it's not my life verse, but it has probably been that verse that's molded me in many ways. If you know the good that you should do and you don't do it, you sin. All right? But that is a tail end of that section. I will say this, we have to be careful about how we are planning and what we are planning. James does not forbid the exercise of godly wisdom in planning. He's not saying don't do it. He's saying do it right. He warns us not to plan with the illusion that somehow we are in control of tomorrow. We are not. So, in the knowledge that God is directing your life's direction, where do you see yourself in 10 years? It's a hard question. If you're seeking God's will, then I think it's appropriate to consider the future as a path of serving Him more faithfully and more fully than any of us are today. Isn't that the Christian life? We seek to love God. We seek to understand Him. We seek to serve Him in some capacity. But by all means, if we are content, which we should be content in the fullest sense of the word, we should be content where we are. But we should always be looking forward to saying, how is God directing? We are created by God. We are His workmanship, and He has created good works for us that He has prepared beforehand for us to do, Ephesians 2:10. We are supposed to be living our life in such a way that we are actually looking forward and saying, how can I serve God more fully and more faithfully in the coming years, to the point where 10 years from now, maybe my life looks different. Maybe I'm serving in a different capacity. Maybe I'm serving in a different community. How many people have left local churches to go plant churches, to go and do missions work across the world? I know many, many people, obviously through much of my education, rubbing shoulders with people, but even in the military and doing different things, but even within corporate America, there are people that are willing to leave behind what is known and familiar to go and do what is unknown, unfamiliar, and a bit frightening. And so as we think about where we think God might have us in 10 years, we will get there. Don't get me wrong. We will get there. But I think we'll get there more enjoyably, more joyfully, if we do it with the intent of really honoring Him every step of the way. We will sit down at one point in time in our life and we will plan out our finances. Whether it's for our first apartment or whether it's for our retirement, we will sit down and we will work the numbers. Why not apply some of those principles and some of that forward thinking to our spiritual walk with the Lord and our call to His service? Are you, in godly wisdom, seeking a path of service in His church? Again, not our church, His church. In a city that is constantly changing due to the transfer in and out of families in the military, are we thinking about our future in our service to God as much as we're thinking about our future in our service to our nation, our current company, or even in our current ministry position? So today's text focuses on one aspect of church service. We're going to talk about the qualifications of a pastor. And before you turn me off, ladies, before you sit there, and any of the men, before you turn me, oh yeah, this is very familiar. Yeah, I got this. Yeah, yeah. Pastor, I think you got it good. I think you cover the bases. Well, to be honest with you, so do I, or I wouldn't be here. But I'll be honest with you. Let's not somehow think that you're not being called to the pastorate. People are called to the pastorate every day. To that role of church leadership that involves all the things that we're going to talk about. But if we somehow get a mindset that's narrow, the most narrow mindset, but somehow that this is talking about your pastor. And it is, but it is not just me. It is all men who God is working. And I didn't get to the pastorate by accident. If I look behind me, my first week of seminary, and who's now a good friend, he was preaching a sermon, and he said, you know, when you look ahead of you, it looks like a maze, and that's true of all of us. When you look ahead, where are you going to be 10 years from now? It's a maze. I have no idea. I think it's this, right? But how I get there, I have no idea. He says, when we look behind you in Christ, when you look behind you, it's a four-lane highway. God brought you from point A to point B to C to D to wherever you are now today because this was His will for your life. You are sitting in this room because this is God's will that you would be sitting in this room. But please hear me as I try to teach His word. Please don't assume that you've arrived. None of us has arrived until we arrive or until He returns. And so as today's focus is upon one particular aspect of church service, I think if we pay close attention, we will see that the qualities of godly church leadership are obtainable goals for all of us. So what we're going to talk about today, yes, I'll do my best to make sure that we're specific in the areas we need to be specific, but then my plan is to broaden out and apply this to each of us, because there are obviously aspects that fall specifically upon men, but ladies, your character matters in the life of the church too. You are not off the hook as we are not off the hook. So I'm going to read the whole passage, and then we'll go through little bit by little bit, and to be honest with you, I'm not sure if we're going to get through the whole text today, because we're gonna pick it up again next week. 1 Timothy chapter 3, if I didn't tell you that, that's where we're at. 1 Timothy chapter 3, starting in verse 1, Paul writes, "The saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of overseer, he desires a noble task. Therefore, an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not a drunkard, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his household well with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders, so that he may not fall into disgrace, into a snare of the devil. So 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 7 is actually one of those passages of Scripture that I've been looking at and studying at for many, many years. We took a class on 1 Timothy. Actually, I think it was our Greek exegesis class, which that was the idea of you're studying the text in the Greek, and you're actually researching each of the words, and you're trying to understand the words and the context of the other words and in the message of the whole book. And I remember spending a lot of time on this, and it was profitable for me, as well as the rest of the guys in the class. But it's been a while since I've actually looked at it in detail. So as we begin today, I want to just hit on verse 1 with this understanding. Having the desire for a position in church leadership is commendable. All right? So having a desire for a position of church leadership is commendable. That desire is not just focused on men, if I can say this. This particular statement is actually a very broad, all-encompassing statement. He says, the saying is trustworthy if anyone, right? If anyone aspires to the office of overseer. Now, it does say he desires a noble task, and I will say this. That is specifically he. He is desiring a noble task. But I think that generically speaking, anyone can desire the position of a pastor teacher in a local church. Anyone can desire to be up here teaching, preaching, you know, ministering to people, and all that is commendable. However, Paul is quick to explain in the following verses that not everyone has the qualifications to serve in the role in a Christ-honoring way. And so just very quickly, this particular verse sets us up for the whole of what's to follow, but let's just be clear. Just because you desire something doesn't mean you get to do it. Just because I desired when I was a little kid to be president of the United States doesn't mean I was going to get to do it. Now, I could have, because I was native born, right? I'm an American citizen. I could have attained to that position of the presidency. Now, as much as he may have wanted to, and I think it was probably in his mind, one of my youthful heroes was Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now, you may think that is absolutely wrong and that I felt that way, but I did, all right? I read his biography. I remember reading all about him, and I was amazed at what he was able to accomplish. And look, he even became the governor of California, right? That's pretty impressive. He could never be president under our current rules of our nation because he wasn't native born, right? He was born in Europe. So as much, but you know what? He got as high as he could probably get, and that's pretty impressive. And there's plenty of things wrong with his life. But I'll tell you, that man had a plan. And that man worked the plan. Right or wrong, he worked the plan. He's not my hero today. But I will tell you this, I do have a lot of respect for what he's able to accomplish in his life. So when I say that anyone can desire this position, it is true, but not anyone can necessarily has the qualifications. Ladies, I'll say right from the outset, you do not have the qualification of being a male. And that sounds sexist in our 21st century minds. It sounds somehow like this can't be right. We just finished talking in the previous chapter. We just finished talking about the roles of men and women in prayer and worship and what can and can't be done. And the Bible is very clear that men and women have different roles. We have different roles in the family. And Satan is trying to tear the family apart. That's why you have Sesame Street back years ago saying, this is a family, and it was a man, a woman, and a child. And this is a family, and it's a woman, and a child. Right? And they know because if they get the youth, and they inculcate this line of thinking in this way into their minds, that they will grow up thinking that it's normal. And the fact is, it is normal, but it's not biblical. Today's day and age, it's normal for people to feel this way. It's not biblical. And I'm not up here preaching any hate, right? Please, and for those of you who know me, you know me, all right? I tell you on a regular basis, if a homosexual couple walks into our church and they sit down in our pew, and they are here and they are respecting us, we're going to respect them. We are not going to kick them out because of their particular flavor of sin. Because we have our own particular flavors. I don't ask people who are not great parents to leave. I don't ask people who are not great spouses. I do not ask people who have anger issues and pride issues and all those things and drinking issues, smoking issues, whatever it might be. I don't ask those people to leave, do you? Because if we did that, we'd all have to leave, myself included, and this place would be empty. So when we are approaching this idea of qualifications for something, please don't receive it as qualifications that somehow you're being, you know, talked down or put in a subservient position. No, it's very clear that God has established roles for men and women, and both those roles are of equal importance, because we wouldn't be here without moms. One of the greatest things that God has given women to do, not all women, honestly, not all women have the privilege and the blessing to actually have birthed a child. I get that. But women as a whole, we didn't get here without one. And God says, listen, that is one of the most noble aspects of the role for women. And so as we bring it down into the idea of the church, we should not somehow think that the church life will be somehow different than our life within our homes. The Bible teaches that Christ is the head of man and the husband. The husband is the head of the wife, right? God's the one that ties his word together and says that this role of leadership falls to men in the family. If you're going to push against that, fine. Talk to God. You wrestle with his word. Don't shoot the messenger. At the same time, when we look at the church, if somehow this is one of the strong thinking, one of the strong thoughts, lines of thought, when it comes to this particular text and why Paul was addressing the qualifications of a overseer, a pastor, a shepherd, is an elder, all these terms are synonymous in many fashions, why he was approaching it this way was, one, leadership in the church should mirror the leadership in the home. Let's not run from the word, all right? If we have a wife who is being submissive in the most godly meaning of that word, right? God's meaning of that word, not what it has come to mean in our society. But if you have a submissive wife to a godly husband, then you come to the church and then you have those roles reversed and you have the wife as the pastor who has a leadership role over the husband, there's going to be some friction. Right? Whether that's fully in Paul's mindset, we cannot say. We can only surmise. We can only kind of evaluate these things. But we can say categorically that God establishes order. And I am all about women in ministry, to be honest with you. The ministry that they have called them to. 1 Corinthians, women need to be praying. Women need to be singing. Women need to be in roles of leadership that they are allowed to be in. That's why we have a healthy ladies ministry. That's why we have older women teaching younger women. This all conforms to the biblical teaching of what leadership is like. So when we talk about having the desire for the position for a position in church leadership, it is commendable across the board. Ladies, you need to serve in this church, and you do. But you need to serve in roles of leadership. Leading other women, leading children. The one area that you're told, and maybe this is the forbidden fruit, the one thing you're not allowed to do is be the pastor of a church according to what God is saying. And this, there's disagreements on this. There's theologians that will differ on this. But I think as we go through the text, it is kind of you take the plain meaning of the text, right? The simple meaning of the text. And the text is very heavily emphasizing it's using masculine nouns, pronouns, positions. It's all in the text. And so, again, not to upset anyone, but let's get into the text. And we're going to look at, first of all, just that first verse. We're going to look at a number of the words and just kind of make sure we understand their meaning and before we build through the rest of the text. So first we have this word overseer. It is a word that is in the Greek. You'll recognize this. In the Greek, it's pronounced episkopos, episcopal, episcopate, All right? It is that word that has been used, has been translated as bishop. Now, what we understand a bishop in today's day and age, we tend to think of a bishop as someone who is in a hierarchical structure of over a diocese of some sort, right? There's a bishop, and then they have priests, and above the bishops you have cardinals, maybe, and different things. But that's not the intent of the word here, because that structure did not exist at this point. That structure develops, and it's thought maybe even as early as the second century. But we're in first century, so when we see this word, it's translated as overseer, it's translated as bishop. It is the same position referred to in other passages of Scripture, and I'm not going to go through all those. But it's also translated as elder, pastor. I did have one quote here. It says, in Acts and other places, this leadership position is called presbyteros, or elder, presbyter, right? Presbytery. We're familiar with some of these English terms, right? Today, the term pastor is widely used, based on the model of shepherding and guiding given to us by the great shepherd, Jesus Christ. All these terms have come to represent those who are charged with overseeing the spiritual affairs of the church. So I, as your pastor, am charged, this is this commentator's words, right? I am charged with overseeing the spiritual affairs of the church. That means there are certain things I can do and certain things I can't do. That does give me a certain level of authority that transcends my ability as a human being. It is, you voted me in as pastor, right? By your voluntary voting me in a pastor, you have authorized me to actually oversee some of the spiritual affairs in this church, which this church is not this structure, it's you. So if I see something in your life, that means I might call you out on it. Am I going to call you out from the pulpit? Fire me the day I do that, okay? Make sure. Just take a church vote right there on the spot. Let's take a vote. The pastor, he just violated everything that it means to be a pastor by doing that. No, I'm not going to call you out publicly unless we go through the process of Matthew 18 and do it appropriately. All right? But even then, that's for restoration. No, as I seek to be a spiritual leader in this church, that means not only will I see maybe something in your life that I call you on, in a loving way and trying to help them and be that, not to sit there and hey, get it right, but no, hey, can I come alongside help? Hey, can I minister to you in some way? Can we go down this road together? But you know what this also means? By when you voted me in as your pastor, it means that you can come to me and not be embarrassed, not be ashamed that somehow I know some private aspects of your life. Why? Because it's my job. It's what God's called me to. And if I ever violate that, like I said, fire me. You have the power to do that. And I'm not perfect. I have made mistakes, right? I say that on a regular basis. But I'm saying, listen, as a pastor, overseer, this is my responsibility. And so that's what that word means. So we're just going to use the word probably pastor throughout the rest of this time. All right, pastor, teacher, that comes into play a little bit later. The second word is this word desire. The word desire signifies to stretch oneself out. In a figurative sense, it describes aspiration or desire. So that's why I asked you, what do you aspire to? What is it that you long for? What is it that would, man, when I look 10 days down the road, when I look 10 years down the road, I mean, I really feel God's working in my life that maybe I could serve Him in a certain capacity. Because, you know, if I was able to serve God in this way, that would just fill me with joy. What is that? And if there's a blank in your mind right now, get on your knees and start praying for that. Lord, how would you have me to serve you? How would you have me to somehow be a part of the body of Christ, whether I'm the eye, the hand, the mouth, the feet, whatever. Lord, how can I, with the gifts that you've empowered me, that you've given me, how can I serve you in such a way that one, brings you glory, and two, ministers to the body of Christ so that it's a healthy body? God desires us to desire. What are you desiring this morning? Is there something in your walk with Christ that says that I am aspiring, I'm stretching myself out because I want to obtain a specific goal? Now, granted, all under the guise of, not pride, but the leading of the Holy Spirit. Because, listen, If a person desires the office of bishop, he desires a good thing. But not everyone is qualified. That truth falls into other areas as well. But there may be some aspect of ministry that you long for that maybe you don't have the qualifications for right now. When I was in seminary, trying to figure out what it is God wanted me to do with my ministry life, right? With my life in ministry, I had all kinds of ideas. One of the ideas that kept popping up was the chaplaincy. The first time I thought about the chaplaincy, I was in a reserve unit in Rhode Island, and I didn't know there was such a thing as a chaplain, to be honest with you. And so I'm at my reserve unit, and this chaplain is there, and I'm like, oh man, I knew I was planning on going to seminary soon. I'm like, well, that's interesting. So I went to him, and I asked him, what do you have to do to be like a chaplain? And he listed off some things, and then he also said some really ridiculous things. Once I became a chaplain, I realized this guy didn't know what he's talking about. But one of the things, I didn't have the qualifications. I didn't have the education. I didn't have the experience. He would say I didn't have the right denomination. All right, so, and that was a long time ago. But so then I started looking at, so I kind of put it on the back burner, went to seminary. I'm in seminary, I'm thinking, what about the chaplaincy? So I go down and I talk to some of the chaplain recruiters, and you know what? You got to have your, at that point in time, I had to have my Master of Divinity, which is 96 credit hours, and I had to have multiple years of ministry experience. I didn't have it. So then the day comes, and I'm serving in the church, and I'm an assistant pastor, and God is just blessing my life and my ministry. I'm loving it. And Bob Stitzinger, who's now with the Lord, you know, we're walking up, he's coming up the stairwell, I'm going down the stairwell, and he says, hey, Greg, the recruiter, we're at a conference, you know, at our church, and he says, hey, the recruiter's got these great mugs, right? And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm too old. I know. I've already missed one of the qualifications. I looked at my age. I was 37, 38, somewhere in there. And I knew I was too old because I had checked into all this stuff. I was too old. So I thought, I'm going to go get a mug. So I go down to the mug. I'm talking to the chaplain there. And he says, man, you don't look too old. How old are you? And I told him. I said, yeah, I know I look young. I've always looked young before I grew this. I always look young. And he said, oh. They raised the age. I had my degree. I had 5 years of experience. I was not too old. I had all the qualifications, and God led me into the chaplaincy, which in many ways, not the only reason he led me there, but in many ways, the only way I would have ended up here is if I had ended up on Fort Bragg. God directs our paths. We do not know what the future holds. We do not know where we'll end up. We do not know what we're going to do. What God does, and he leads and he directs, but listen, is he leading you kicking and screaming? Or is he leading you in such a way that you are willing to submit to his leadership, to his desire for your life? Do you desire, do you have this stretching oneself out for something? The word is actually usually used in a negative desire of yearning after something that's not good, but in this text, it's obviously used positively. So as we go on in the text, the third word that he uses is the word noble, and it means what you would think it would mean. It means good, praiseworthy, beautiful. So the person that desires, that has this longing to serve God in this specific capacity of pastor, overseer, church leader, it is a good, praiseworthy, beautiful desire. There is no condemnation attached to this. It is commendable that we are desiring these things. Now, specifically, again, in the context of what Paul is teaching Timothy, this is talking about the pastor-teacher role. But I think if we were to apply this to our lives, ladies, you can find aspects of leadership within our church family that you find fulfillment in. Find it. Desire it. And knowing that God honors this, the next word we see is the task. It says, the saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of overseer, he desires a noble task. Task is that. It means work. And so what Paul was addressing in Timothy's life and in the church at Ephesus, of which Timothy was pastoring, is, listen, there are false teachers. There are people that are saying the wrong things. They're leading the wrong direction. They're highlighting the wrong things. They are ignoble. They are all the opposite of what's going on here. They are desiring it for their own gain. They're desiring it for the wrong motivation, with the wrong motivation, the wrong purposes. And so what we see Paul explaining to Timothy is the truth that a leadership position in a church should be a sought-after position, but the church should know who to place in that position. I did not get here in my own strength. Now, I'll be honest with you, I came this route differently than most people. I knew the previous pastor was stepping down before many of you did. Because why? We went to the same seminary, we were friends, and so I sat in that very pew right there, actually. Didn't have the nice comfy cover on it, right? So, oh no, it did, that's right. No, this is after Afghanistan. So yeah, it was. It was that pew right there. I'm sitting there, he's standing down here. He's pacing, right? It's Pastor West, right? He's pacing. I'm sitting there, I'm talking to him about what's going on in his life, and he's telling me the woes and the different things. And I pleaded with him. I pleaded with him not to leave. To this day, I believe that he should not have stepped down. Why do I believe that? Because, listen, he hadn't arrived. It's not that he would have been a great pastor and all that. I don't know, because he left, right? We don't know any of that possibility. But for his spiritual calling that God had called him to, of which this church affirmed when he was voted in as pastor, he walked away. And so, therefore, there was this void of pastoral leadership in the church. And I didn't seek after it. Okay, I was scared to death. But if I've ever received a calling, it was a calling to be the pastor of this church. One of those audible voice type moment type things. And I did initially come kicking and screaming. But God has worked in such a way that all this has come together. It's the four-lane highway, folks. It's the four-lane highway. We all understand that. But it was your decision to vote me in. Therefore, a lot of this responsibility falls upon you, as it should. So, that's all out of verse 1, okay? So that's why I said we're not going to get too far into this, because I need each of us, when I say I need, we need to understand that this text is talking specifically from a spiritual father figure to a spiritual child figure who are both in ministry, and they're both seeking to do the Lord's will, but you know, the context of their life was one of persecution. It was one of misunderstanding. It was one of adversity. They have false teachers saying things, and Timothy in his youth is supposed to confront these people. That's what Paul is saying. I charge you, Timothy. You know, and he's charging Timothy and to stand up for what's right. And so he says here, first of all, listen, the church needs to appoint the qualified people to the role of the pastor teacher to the church leadership position that we're discussing. So the overarching character trait for a person desiring to be in church leadership and the overarching responsibility upon the church family when they place someone in that position is that he must be beyond criticism. How uncomfortable is it for me to stand up here and say, I'm supposed to be beyond criticism? When I know, in the very hearts and minds of a few in the room, some of my failings may have come up to you like, well, you know, he said this. You know, he made this appropriate joke. I warned you the day I got voted in. If there's one thing that gets me in trouble, it's going to be my sense of humor. It has proven to be true. I think I've broadened myself and gotten in trouble in other ways too. But I'll say this. Beyond criticism is not the idea of sinless. I think we all admit that I'm a sinful person. But it's the idea that he must not be characterized by habitual sinful living. That Paul kind of spells out in the coming verses. So this is that overarching trait of which everything that follows kind of is summed up into. Okay, so he says, listen, an overseer is supposed to be above reproach. So as we think about each one of these categories, there are ways where we'll just take the first one, the husband of one wife. This is one of those passages, those small little phrases of Scripture that has produced multiple volumes of books to understand exactly what it means to be the husband of one wife. And I'm not going to enumerate them for you, all right? That's just, there's no time to do that. I will say this, I'm supposed to love the wife that I have. And I believe that to be above reproach, she needs to be the only wife I've had, unless my previous wife has passed away. Okay? So many people would say a divorced person can still be a pastor. Some people will say that divorce happened before they came to the Lord. Some people will say, well, if they divorced under biblical circumstances where the wife had been unfaithful and therefore the divorce took place and he is in good stead, you know, and that he's, you know, he didn't do anything wrong. I always think there's two people in this. Why did she? So I kind of wonder about those whole things, right? Some people will say all those things, but what the overriding principle is to be above reproach. Ladies, how would you feel if there was a man standing behind the pulpit every week and you knew this was his third marriage? Right? And he's preaching on what it means to be a godly wife. Right? What it means to be a godly husband. There's an aspect of doubt that will enter, more than likely, enter your heart and mind. And I'm trying to be careful. I'm not saying categorically that a divorced person cannot be a pastor. I'm not saying that. Because I don't think the text says that in so many words, so black and white. I do believe, and this I'm going to say this a lot, wisdom would say, to be above reproach, would say, the husband of one wife. Not just one wife. Some people say, well, that just means, and I've said this in my ignorance, I've said this, that that just means in the, with polygamy, right? Multiple wives, one husband type thing. Well, what I didn't realize was that really wasn't even common in the pagan culture of the day. That wasn't in the Roman time period. That really wasn't. When we think of polygamy, we usually go back to the Old Testament. That's really what the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, when they practiced polygamy, of which they don't practice officially anymore, they go back and they talk about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, right? Jacob. You know, I just worked through that in my devotions, you know. A wife that he didn't intend to marry, Leah, right? And then he married Rachel, which is, you know, that's the one he really wanted to marry, and then well, you know, Rachel couldn't have any kids, so she went ahead and gave him her maidservant as a wife, and then because Leah then kind of stopped having kids, she was like, well, I can't let her one up me, so I'm going to let him have my maidservant. And so the guy has four wives, 12 kids, right? Well, 12 men. They also had a daughter, at least one daughter. So as we understand this whole idea, we're not talking about. I don't think Paul's addressing the idea that a husband needs to only have one wife, because the common thing in the time was to be a polygamous relationship, because it wasn't. So what is he saying? Most people are comfortable with the terminology. He's a one-woman man. The person that he is married to, he is devoted to. He is devoted in action. He is devoted in thought. It is the idea that he is not, you know, his eyes are not wandering around grazing on the fields that are around him. He's supposed to be focused upon his bride. I love my wife. She loves me. I tell people all the time, there is no marriage I would ever want to have but ours. I know there's great marriages out there. I wouldn't want any of them. I have mine. It is good, and God has blessed it. And I'm thankful for it. So I am the husband of one wife. In the future, when you are in whatever church setting you might find yourself in, and you're voting in a pastor, does it mean that the pastor has to be married? No, it does not mean that either. It's saying if he is married, he ought to be the husband of one wife. But it does not discount single people. He says that this particular person is supposed to be sober-minded. It is the idea of being temperate, level-headed, and restrained. Now, listen, on any given time, you could sit there and say, Pastor doesn't look so level-headed or restrained in his zeal for things. But I do not think I'm characterized by jumping to conclusions. I do not think I'm characterized by making decisions like that. It's not something I've made mistakes, but it's certainly not something that characterizes me. I have frustrated people more at the slow pace I go to make decisions, not the quick pace. It goes on to say he's supposed to be self-controlled, moderate, prudent, thoughtful. If there's a pastor of any church who is characterized by lack of self-control, we would know what that person looks like, wouldn't we? They'd be all over the map. What does self-control look like? It looks like a person in control. not saying one thing one week and another thing another week and treating people, you know, differently. I think one aspect of being self-controlled, and maybe this is part of this, maybe it's part of one of the other character traits, but is, listen, I tell people all the time, who I am is who I am in the pulpit and in the pew and in my office and at home. When you get Greg, you get all of me. In whatever capacity, whatever role that I'm functioning in, I'm seeking to not be a duplicitous person. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. I just want to be Greg. And by the way, feel free to call me that from time to time, right? I know it's pastor. I got it, you know. But, you know, I tell people, and I believe this is all part of this. My local church ministry that I aspire to and God said is commendable and God equipped me and trained me for is my local church ministry. What is yours? What is your local church ministry? Because God has called you, equipped you, trained you for wherever you're at. But does He desire you to stay put right there? I don't think so. I think God would have us to continue to grow and be nurtured and do what it is that He wants us to do. We are supposed to be respectable. That word is the idea of a well-ordered life, which again, I really struggle with that when I go into my own office, right? It's not very well ordered, although I can usually find what I need to find. All right, I don't think it's just talking about my piling system that I have. It's talking about, in general, you are a well-ordered life. You are characterized by doing things in a proper fashion, an honorable way. It's an honorable approach to life. And so a part of that outworking of that is respecting that should be true of you as well. I respect when people come to me. I was at a wedding, okay? Again, I love stories, and I'm sorry. You know what? We're going to go ahead and stop with this one. I'm going to tell this story, and then we're going to close, and we'll pick up the rest of it next week. So I'm at a wedding. And not to be crude, but I'm in the bathroom. And three guys walk in. They don't know I'm there. Hence, I'm in a stall. Okay, so they don't know I'm in there, and it's F-bomb this and F-bomb that, and you know, da-da-da-da, and I'm like, oh no, here we go. Here we go. I'm going to walk out, and I'm going to hear what I've heard my whole ministry life. It's the pastor. It's the chaplain, right? So sure enough, walk out of the stall. Big guy, big beard down here. Oh, man, I didn't know you were in there. Here I am talking like this, and the pastor's in the room. They all know because I did the wedding, right? I officiated at the wedding. So I just looked and I said, hey, man, I'm used to it. You know, I'm used to it. I was in the military, and his whole demeanor changed. You were a chaplain? I was like, yeah. All right? So we talked for a little bit. You know, got the uncomfortableness. I let him off easy, right? You know, I should have said, you know, go ahead, hit the knees, say so many prayers of this. And so, you know, I didn't do that. We got off easy. I went out, and then I noticed he was standing all alone. So I made my way over, because that's what I do. And I kind of had this guy pegged. He wasn't one of the Army, you know, covert operators that we have in our community, but he was a Marine covert operator. It doesn't take long to spot some of these guys. And so I engage him in conversation, and I say all this to say this. My well-ordered life is supposed to be proper and honorable, and that means I treat people that way. So I loved on this guy for a little while, just to see, God, are you going to open up a door for ministry to this? His name's Billy, right? And not the Billy that we know, some of us from our church. That's not the same Billy, different Billy. And he took to me like that. And we had about a half an hour just talking. And you know what? I respect that man. Do I think he's a believer? No, I don't think he's come to Christ yet. Do I think I sowed a seed? I don't know, because really we didn't get into a whole lot of gospel talk. But you know what? People need to know we respect them. So yes, it's a qualification for me. But as we close, let's just say this. Are you faithful to your spouse if you're married? Are you sober-minded in the way you live out your life? Are you characterized by being level-headed, restrained? Many of you are, right? So self-controlled, are you characterized by this? All these qualifications are true of the person that's supposed to be standing behind this pulpit. But they're also supposed to be true of us in our general way of life. And we'll talk about this more next week, but men, let me finish. You know, we started with the ladies. Let me finish with you. Is God calling you to the pastorate? That doesn't mean I'm going to come tap you on the shoulder, although I might, and I have. It means that God may be drawing you to a specific area of ministry. Don't kick and scream. Be submissive to God's leading. If there's a ministry in the church that requires you to have these character traits, you know? I actually said that in an improper fashion, all right? What I'm saying is, if you model your life after these, you will be qualified for if and when God calls you. It's not like, God's calling me to be a pastor. Well, now I have to do all these things. No, it's the idea of, no, if I'm supposed to be a faithful child of God who wishes to serve in all capacities, I should seek to live my life above reproach. We all make mistakes. We all sin. We all do those things. But listen, when you bring God into the picture, seek in His strength and His wisdom to live your life in such a way that you are living above reproach. Where people could not call you and say, you have this habitual sinful lifestyle. How can you call yourself a Christian? It matters. Men and women, our character, the way we live our life, it matters. It has eternal consequences because God, and we'll get there, the world is watching. We'll get there next week. The world is watching. It matters. Let's pray.